way of doing it.
As I mean, English drinkers have like. How do you see the Australian...
Careful.
British. Okay, sorry. British? That's right?
British is fine. Yeah,
British. You won't get glassed over British.
I prefer English.
It's kicking off.
Except where Andy Murray's winning Wimbledon. Then.
Or when England's losing the Ashes.
Oh. We're not mentioning that. That's what happens when you play cricket on a... crater.
Somebody said, yeah, who put the pitch in a tectonic plate?
Cricket talk.
Sorry, what was the question?
Sessionable.
All right, so next beer, what are we
drinking?
Okay. Something really good.
This next one is from a brewery that I've got a real soft spot for. It's Oakham Ales, who are originally from the very small township of Oakham in rural Rutland. They did then outgrow that premises and move to Peterborough, which is a slightly larger town. This one we're drinking now is Inferno, which is a 4.4% beer, which is a brilliantly easy drinking beer.
What's the style?
I guess the style on this would be a golden ale.
Yeah.
But it's one that I think's got a real kind of unique for a British beer. It's got a real kind of aggressive lemon characteristic.
Yeah, I get like a lemon grapefruit sort of thing, but
a bit of spice.
You'd expect that to come with a really big hop hit as well. If you think of golden ale with grapefruit, you think of a certain amount of hops and everything. But
there's a bit of a hop burn like at the back. It's not an aggressively
malt-driven beer.
Especially with an Inferno, I remember when I first had it, I went,
this is
that's
huge.
Really, really nice, but I was really expecting a lot more alcohol, I was expecting a lot more burn, expecting a lot more of everything. I mean, that is a beautifully drinkable beer. That is really
so
good.
It's a great
For me, that's what it is. It's all about. It's about, you know, your 2 weeks of summer in the UK. It's about buying your pint, taking it out.
2 weeks? That's optimistic.
taking it out to the beer garden and drinking it by the pint, because it just goes down that easily and that beautifully. So, I mean, this is from the sort of region where I went to university, and there were, you know, the best beer pubs in Leicester would bring this stuff in from the neighbouring Peterborough. And, you know, I just love Oakham. There's a very definable characteristic to all of their beers. You can identify that it's an Oakham beer. Oakham were one of the first sort of kind of new wave microbrewers in the UK.
Are they craft, or are they...
Well, they came about in the early 90s, so they were formed in the early 90s, and they were new wave microbrewery. This term craft appeared a lot later. Microbrewery came around a lot earlier.
Yeah.
You know, so they were.
But you were saying you drank them at a Camera festival, so are they Camera? So
absolutely.
Is it mostly real ale?
Camera supported all of the microbreweries while they were producing real ale, and absolutely, Oakham are very much a real ale brewery.
Yeah, okay,
they still produce all of their stuff that's on draft, as far as I'm aware, unless it's changed in the last few months, is all cask conditioned beer, and then they've got the bottles as well, the bottle range to go with it as well. It was very, very difficult to come by Oakham beer, apart from in the local area, for quite a long time, and only recently have they sort of got into some of the supermarkets as well now, and I think it's only since then that we've started to see some of it heading over.
It's interesting, because I mean, it's been, less than about a year since
they've come in,
come into Australia, and for me, I always thought they were like, you know, this is a new brewery and like, you know, this is a new wave. But to hear that they were one of the first ones of that.
They were one of the new wave breweries, like the early 90s. You know, there was, William, I don't know, you might know a bit more about this, but there were some legislative changes in the late 80s that meant that, I think that something to do with freeholds and the ties of pubs.
The ties of pubs all changed. It was basically, and it was very much driven by the campaign for real ale. The big breweries owned the largest numbers of pubs, so they actually tied up entire towns. So you might have one single brewery, like Bass or Whitbread, might own every single pub in a town or in an area. So the campaign for real ale went out to try and bust that, and they cut down the number of pubs that any one brewery was allowed to own. But of course, they didn't managed to do what they did in the States, which was say that breweries cannot own a pub at all, because a lot of the smaller breweries would die off straight away if they didn't have their own pubs. So they brought in these laws, which really freed up the market quite a lot. So, you know, a lot of pubs went onto the market, which of course were the worst ones that the brewers owned.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the brewers, quite cleverly, so Bass basically sold all of their pubs and then signed a deal that said that, you know, those pubs had to buy Bass beer. So they basically tied them in anyway. But it freed up a lot of taps. They put in, like, you know, every single pub was allowed to have two guest beers, and they had to be cask beers, interestingly enough. But they were allowed to have two cask beers as guests. So all of a sudden, there's a lot of small breweries that could actually get their beers into these pubs.
And it's interesting because I think, you know, Oakham very much kind of followed the route that Riverside are going now. You know, they served their local area first and foremost, and it was only available in that sort of small area to start with.
I love that,
and
we've managed to get Riverside as well. UK.
Twice.
Well, with it just makes me so happy.
Well, with Oakham, they won the Camera Champion Beer of Britain in 2001 with their JHB, which is their sort of entry level 3.8% golden ale, which at the time was one of the hoppiest low ABV golden ales in the country, and very, very roundly celebrated. It's still available, you know, in certain Wetherspoons pubs now in the UK, and, you know, it's still their biggest seller. But it was very, very heavily celebrated, and then that kind of sort of kicked them onto a new level. In 2006, that's when they moved from their first brewery into the new place in Peterborough. And apparently, that's the biggest brewery tap in Europe, the brewery tap in Peterborough. I've been there. It's just kind of sat in the middle of a car park. Doesn't look particularly illustrious, but apparently it's the biggest brewery tap in the whole of Europe.
What do you mean by brewery tap?
So it's brewery tap is where they sort of brew, and then they serve beer.
So it's like the
premises. Yeah, so it's the brewery bar, basically.
Yeah, cellar door.
Which really isn't
like the one that Riverside has.
Yeah. But that's not very good. That sort of thing's not very common in the UK.
Riverside.
It's not very popular to have that sort of level of interaction in the UK.
Because the breweries own pubs.
Looking at Oakham, I think they've probably only got sort of 6 to 8 pubs in their estate, and a lot of them have been there for a long time. They only opened their first premises in London, in South London, in a place called Kennington, within the last 18 months.
Is it fairly easy to get this beer on cask in London, or do you have to go close to where Oakham
is? It's very difficult to find Oakham still, other than JHB, which is the one that's kind of broken ranks a bit and is more widely available. Very difficult to find any other Oakham beers anywhere else other than the East Midlands.
Okay.
So Peterborough, Leicester, that sort of area, you can get it in quite a few pubs very regularly, and the next beer that we're about to have as well. But other than that, it's quite difficult to come by, and you have to really go to your proper beer pubs who've got the landlords who are dedicated, who will actually drive the length and breadth of the country in order to bring the beer back to their pub themselves.
Wow,
it's a country that you can actually do that.
You can. You can do that, absolutely.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to go drive to Ferrell, I think.
See in about a fortnight.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Road trip.
Yeah. I was going to say, next time I go to England, I'll need to hunt this down on cask, because I think it'll taste amazing on cask.
It's terrific.
I'd love to try some
cask. It's tasting amazing already.
So this has got all US hops, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's warmed up. It actually had quite a fair bit of a hop spice behind it.
Really like
that. That's something we haven't actually said. Is the new wave brewers kind of left the whole Fuggles, East Kent, Goldings thing behind.
Goldings,
they started to import Cascade first, and then other hops along with them as well.
Did they grow it there?
These were imported hops, and this blew the mind of the beer nerd in the UK. These were flavours that we'd not tasted before.
Yeah.
It's kind of like all these, you know, Galaxy and Nelson hop beers showing up in the US, and everyone's like, "Whoa, what are these hops?"
Just something new,
it's the same thing.
And we're thinking,
"Well, it's just Galaxy."
Yeah, we've had them for years.
Or, yeah, it, yeah.
Boring.
But it's great to see, you know, the Oakham winning the Champion Beer of Britain. So it's a campaign for real ale, you know. They're not standing there hindering people. They're just saying, this is the dispense method you need. They're actually out there saying, hey, that's a wonderful beer, let's promote it. And that that taste of that beer, all that citrus, all that kind of grapefruit, that orange peel that it's got, you know, that just does not exist in those traditional beers.
No, not at all.
You know,
as long as you're playing by their rules, they're more than happy.
Yeah.
That is a lovely beer.
Yeah.
No, I think last time I went to England, I still wasn't that educated about English beers, and also I got in at about 7 a.m. and nothing else was open, so I went into this 24-hour pub and got their hand pump beer, and it was Green King IPA.
I do feel for you.
And their breakfast was terrible as well. I was like, well,
what you've got to bear in mind with Green King IPA, if I may just come onto the subject.
We knew it was going to happen.
Is that this is the single most widely available cask beer in the whole of the UK. And this is what people who are not particularly into beer in the UK think an IPA is.
Mm.
This is 3.6%.
Yeah.
It's brown.
Yeah.
It's got very, very little in terms of flavour. It's a very watery, bitter-like ale.
Yeah.
And this is what people think IPA is. You know, Green King for me have ruined IPA for a whole load of people who might have tried another IPA.
That's a shame.
I was coming from like a kind of opposite stance where I knew what an IPA was and I thought, this isn't an IPA. What the fuck is this?
It's sort of like, I mean, maybe the Australian analogy would be like the James Squires range, I guess. Like the James Squires Stowaway IPA, I personally wouldn't really call that an IPA.
Well, you'd probably call that a relatively strong pale ale.
Yeah.
Green King isn't even close to that. It's lucky if it's a bitter.
It's 3% or something? Like
3.6.
Really, yeah, it's really 3.6%. Low.
3.6%. And it suffers from the same problems that Fuller's suffers from.
Mm.
Other than the fact that it's more widely available and people who actually know something about beer don't actually order it at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, whereas Fuller's Pride you might order because you think it's a, you know, a good beer that you would want to drink. Green King IPA is just there generally as the single cask beer in a pub that doesn't want
to
do cask
to tick
beer.
The boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's Camera's stance on Green King IPA?
Oh, they think it's great.
Okay. That's all I needed.
It ticks all the boxes for them.
Yeah.
It's cask conditioned, therefore it's great.
Yeah.
And they actually sponsor their Great British Beer Festival and actually ploughing quite a bit of money to Camera, so I'm sure they're very happy with them.
Yeah.
But if you go back to, you know, who's won the awards at those competitions, it's not winning the awards.
Yeah.
No. But they're happy to take their money.
I think it did win one year and it there was
might have been a long time.
There was a lot
ago.
Of unhappy people.
So, we've got our next beer in front of us. What are we drinking, Brad? This was your...
Yeah.
This was one you particularly wanted to
drink.
This
was my pick for today, really. This was my epiphany beer. So I was talking about my time as a student in Leicester.
Yeah.
So I'd gone to the beer festival. I'd managed to try a few beers. I had kept a record of what I'd had, but that actually then, you know, really drove a curiosity in me to try and...
So you could keep a record of your beers without using Untappd?
I could absolutely. Do you know what we used in those days? We used a pen and paper.
Pen
I went
and
to
paper?
Many, many beer festivals where I printed out an entire beer list from the festival and literally ticked off the beers that
I had.
Like
an animal.
Absolutely. But sadly, I didn't keep those records, so I can't then actually refer back to them. I just have to rely on my memory to try and remember what I had. But anyway, going to that first beer festival, that would have been 2004. The Leicester Beer Festival in 2004, that then drove a curiosity in me to actually go out and find more of this good beer and sort of research into the best beer pubs in the city. In Leicester at the time, there was a pub called Out of the Vaults. It was previously called The Vaults, which was an underground bar, and then they purchased a new premises, which was actually overground. the guy there had a very good relationship with the guys from Oakham and would often have at least two or three of the Oakham beers on the bar at the time. And this was one that was almost on all the time, and it was one that I went in, ordered a pint, again, sort of sat down, and just absolutely loved it from the very first sip. Bishop's Farewell has got a real kind of grapefruit. You identified a bit of grapefruit in the Inferno. I think this is far more kind of grapefruit heavy. So again, it's sort of challenging flavours that you don't expect to find in a British beer. But also, I find that this beer can, you know, like most cask beer, it can vary. So when you get a really, really great batch of Bishop's Farewell, you actually pick up on sort of strawberry and kiwi type flavours in there as well. Cool. It can be really kind of fruity and bouquet-like, and I just absolutely love this beer. It's the one that I remember as, you know, introducing me to this whole new world. And as soon as I had this one, I just wanted to have more and more and more. And that's when I started on my journey of touring the beer festivals, and actually, you know, veering towards beers that I'd never had before, just so that I could try everything. Yeah. Mm. You know, I'd started to pass up beers that I knew I liked because I wanted to try the stuff that I'd not had before.
What I really like about this beer and the other Oaken we had as well is, like, if you look at the colour of it, it could just be any Pisswick lager.
It's almost the same colour, like, as the Foster's we had earlier.
Yeah, but there's so much bitterness and flavour and, like,
body and depth and complexity.
It's great beers, yeah.
Colour-wise, they're both almost exactly the same as each other. Yeah. You know, the noses are slightly different. I actually prefer the Inferno, the lighter. And it's funny because I felt it was a much fresher bottle.
Yeah.
And I don't like the Bishop's Farewell. It's actually, you know, it's got an extra 6 months further on it. So it's actually, presumably the Inferno's actually the older beer, but I felt the Inferno tasted much fresher.
So. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Inferno, actually, I got into my store like a week ago, so it's quite a fresh shipment. I'm not sure when the Bishop's Fingers come into the country.
The Bishop's Farewell has probably been sat in a Dan Murphy's warehouse for quite a while. But I don't know when they started selling it, but I only became aware that they had it within the last few weeks, and as soon as I did, I went and bought everything that they had in stock at the time.
Well, I don't think Dan's has been carrying this stuff
I don't know. They can't.
Because I'm pretty sure they started getting this when they got all the or the Bureau del Borgo stuff.
They've only just started doing the Experience Italian ones.
Yeah, so it's not that long ago. Yeah.
I see, yeah.
It's probably from the same shipment, even.
Yeah.
But this is slightly more, slightly stronger than the, only very slightly, it's 4.6%, it's 5% in the bottle. It's 4.6% in cask condition format, it's 5% in the bottle. So it's another one of these breweries that actually pump up their bottled selection a little bit more. But actually, you know, the interesting thing is that a 4.6% cask condition beer is considered a premium beer, premium strength ale in the UK.
It's very interesting.
I just love the body, and I think that translates really well to the bottle in this beer, which isn't always the case with British ales when they get bottled. I actually think the body carries through really, really nicely.
Definitely,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
really enjoyed both of these beers.
Yeah. So, Brad, you were saying this one's was sort of your epiphany beer.
Yeah.
Willie, you were saying you've been drinking beer for a long time. But do you have an epiphany moment when it comes to beer, or is it just something that was always...
I don't have epiphanies from the UK. I mean, oddly enough, the first time that I had cask condition Fuller's London Pride was one of those moments. But, I mean, again, that was in Scotland in a pub called the Malt Shovel, oddly enough. And, you know, went in and, you know, I knew the owner, and he's, oh, well, look what I've got. And this was something in Scotland that was completely unique at the time. Yeah. You know, so we're going back over 20 years. Fuller's London Pride, and it was spectacular. And this was lunchtime, and, you know, I had 4 pints of it. Each one of those glasses, like, you look at the lacing down the glass, it was 4 gulps. So 16 gulps of beer. And then I went, this is how long ago this was. It was the Die Hard was on at the movies. So I went to Die Hard, the first one.
So it was Christmas time.
Christmas time, yeah.
Went to see Die Hard at the movies. And fell asleep probably quite early on in the film. I don't remember much of it at all, but Fuller's London Pride was certainly one of those beers that just ticked the box.
Know what it was before?
Absolutely. So it had a great reputation, but at the time it was a London beer, and you got it in London, and it wasn't nationally distributed. And, you know, someone had
so who was bringing
driven
those?
Down. So
who
some was... some guy had driven his truck down to London, bought it. taken it back up to the independent pubs in Scotland and said, hey, I've got some kegs of this or some casks of this, some casks of that. And they're like, yeah, we'll give you this, we'll get you that, we'll get you that.
And that's literally what it took back then to get these beers to these other parts of the country. Absolutely. Nowadays, there's better kind of swaps going on between some of the microbreweries in the UK. So some of the, you know, some of the like-minded breweries will actually swap casks of beer so that they can get to other parts of the UK.
Well, I mean, it does happen here to a degree where, like, you know, people, like, different breweries will send kegs to each other and then they'll fill them up with their own beer and send it back to them and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What? How do you guys see the Australian beer scene at the moment? What do you think of it? Do you see any parallels? Any similarities? You're on mute, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think it's very, very different. This is much more similar to what happened in America over here. The thing with Britain is that, you know, whether it's through the campaign for real ale or just the love of ale itself, Britain didn't lose those traditional styles.
Yeah.
Whereas,
they're always there.
You know, America lost them, you know, here lost them altogether. It's interesting if you look at, you know, we're talking about the difference between Scotland and the rest of Britain. Scotland only had two big breweries. So it had Bass, which was Tennent's, and Scottish Newcastle, and they owned virtually all of the pubs. They had a complete monopoly on beer in the country. Much, much more similar to what we have here in Australia. Decent beer was virtually extinct in Scotland. You know, it was very difficult to get cask beer. We were drinking probably 85% lager by that time as well. Lager was absolutely massive.
85% lager? Holy shit, that's really strong.
Sorry. It probably is more similar to what was happening in Scotland than the Renaissance that kind of took place in Scotland. It's probably more similar to what's happened in Australia.
Well, for me, the main difference is it's got to come down to alcohol by volume. For whatever reasons, there is a much lower average alcohol by volume in the UK, part to do with the temperance movement at the turn of the 19th century, but also because of the beer duty reasons once you hit that 4% mark. And also just the perception that, you know, these European lagers that came in the 60s and 70s, you know, it was the lager louts, it was your wife beater beers that were above 5%. And it remains to this day, real negative connotations about beer that is strong. You know, BrewDog had to really fight it when they came out with their stronger strength beers, and even though they were trying to preach to people that it wasn't about drinking it in quantity, it was about enjoying it in moderation.
I mean, good luck drinking that stuff in quantity.
Absolutely. No one would have
to
do it.
I get Tokyo Star.
The size of the glass again goes into that.
Sure.
Because
you have to drink
a pint. Like, if you have a pint of beer in a pub, you would be looked at very funnily. You have a pint of beer, so once you get into that 5% beer, you're going to have a commitment and you're sound asleep during Die Hard.
But for me, for me though, there is a real art to creating a fine, weaker beer. You know, something in the 3.5 to 3.9% range.
Yeah.
You know, there are these, you know, craft brewers, for want of a better word, you know, these microbrewers in the UK who are of this new wave, and they are creating some really good hoppy beer at that sort of strength. It's about, you know, some of my favourite beers, you know, Hophead, I spent a lot of the last 5 years before I came out here to Australia, my local pub served Hophead almost constantly, which was by Dark Star Brewery.
All right,
They're from sort of near Brighton on the south coast, but it was a real cascade laden kind of beer.
Nice.
It, you know, real similarities to 55, the Riverside 55, in terms of its hot profile.
Yeah, yeah.
But it came in at 3.8%, and it had this body though, because it was served cask conditions. It had this body. It had this hop drive, but you could drink three or four pints of it without really, you know, feeling the effects.
Yeah.
And that's a real attraction for me. So the main difference for me is, you know, the strength and the extremity of flavours that you get over here, because everything is 7, 8, 9%. Mm. You know, when you're getting the real,
because our standard strength is almost 5. Basically, yeah. It's 4.6.
Yeah, yeah. You don't really see anything less than 5%. No. So for me, the breweries seem to be far less restrained by this tradition of having to produce beer that's of sensible strength.
But having said that, I think some of my favourite Australian beers are the, you know, like Watermelon Warhead from Feral. The Murray's Retro Rocket, I think, is fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, Retro Rocket's good. Amazing. You know, Retro Rocket's like, a good example of what they're trying to do over there.
Mm. It's 2.8.
Perhaps not the same sort of body that you would expect, but
Nail did a one as well recently. The Tack Light. That was it. Yeah.
So other than the ABV, it's the hops are obviously a lot better over here.
Yeah.
You know, the hops are great, but also the price is a big difference as well. You know, the beer over here is extortionate.
Mm.
You
expensive.
Know, it's, you know,
well, it surprises me. I guess it's because there's no market for it, but if you get under a certain percentage, I can't remember what it is. It might be 3.5. But when you get under that, you have to pay less excise, I believe, in Australia. So I'm surprised that there's not,
it's not,
there's
a
not
thing,
more
but I just think there's a,
breweries.
There's
a such
it.
A people, instilled...
People do... Well, what you were saying earlier is when people look at the you know, the decals at the pub and they go for the weakest one.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the opposite. In Australia, people will go and they'll look at it, and if they're at similar prices, higher. They'll go for the stronger one.
Well, look at James Squires with their Copper Ale, which is a mid-strength beer, and they have... purposely decided not to market it as a mid-strength beer.
Yeah, mm. they don't call it mid at all.
No, like, because they don't want people to think it's low in alcohol, which it is. It because is. They know people won't buy it.
Why does Tui's mid and, you know, those sorts of beers sell as well as...
They're old man beers. No one drinks them.
Yeah, like, that's a different sort of market, and that's a... Yeah.
And it's not that no one drinks them, well, because if you look at 4X Gold, 4X Gold is the biggest selling beer in Australia for quite a long time.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And it's a mid-strength
it and beer. VB are neck and neck most of the time.
So VB's overtaken again. But, you know, that is still a mid-strength beer. Yeah. It's, you know, you get a carton of it up in Queensland and it's cheaper because of the low tax. So it is actually selling, but it's flavourless dishwater liquid. It's a lot different from the art that Brad's talking about of creating a beer that tastes good at lower strength.
I think that because 4X is sort of the norm, that mid-strength is what a lot of craft beer drinkers are trying to get away from. Mm, they go up instead of...
But do you think that... I'll put this to you guys. Do you think that the craft beer market is, I guess, concentrated enough that if they see a low strength beer from a trusted craft brewer like Riverside or Feral or Mornington or something, would they go for that in droves if it tastes fantastic? Like, would they expect it to taste fantastic?
Why would they not? Why would they not? I mean, surely Watermelon Warhead has proven that.
Yeah.
You know, that people will drink it. They will go for that over anything else, even though it's a much weaker strength. It's about the beer.
Mm.
At the end of the day, it's about the beer. But I wonder whether the fact that you mentioned, Adrian, that there was a 3.5% cut-off, I wonder whether that's just a little bit too low. Is that 4% in the UK? So brewers would concentrate their beers at 3.8%,
3.9%. I think it's like a... 3-tier system where, like, under 3.5 you have low strength, and then you have mid strength between 3.5 and 5, something like that.
I imagine
and then
it's probably quite a step
and
that,
then after that it's just the regular strength stuff.
Session ball.
So we've got a beer, I think, Cromarty, is that right, Willie?
Cromarty, yes. Cromarty. That is correct. Well done.
Cromarty.
I'm very proud that you finally got it. Well done.
I'm going to slip, and I'm going to say Cromarty. And
so this is Cromarty, and it's from the Cromarty Firth, which is just north of Inverness, and north of Loch Ness.
Very far north.
And you'll find that this is probably one of the most isolated breweries that you'll ever see. I went onto Google Maps when I first saw that it was coming over a few weeks ago, and it's like this one road that kind of goes out just kind of north and east of Inverness, and it just keeps on going and keeps on going, and there's just nothing else, and then there's this little dot on Google Maps that says Cromarty Brewery, and then just nothing else. It's just so isolated, so much in the middle of nowhere.
You really taste my, that.
You can taste the isolation.
It makes nice story in a Scottish brew. My brother back home has been raving about these guys for a while. And
so you have heard of them before?
Yeah, so yeah. I was really surprised to see that they were coming over, because like, they're a tiny brewery and you know,
very remote.
Their sheer isolation would just like stop them from being something that you would expect any big importer
to bring to Australia over. So, nonetheless,
so to see this getting over here, this is the Red Rocker, which obviously is a red ale.
It's very much a rye.
I'm getting that rye quite a bit.
It's got a lot of that rye going for it, doesn't it? Kind of nickel kind of thing going to it.
Yeah, sorry, Willie. I cracked the IPA a couple of days ago, which is really dark as well.
Okay. Like, so, almost this colour, or...?
Slightly lighter, but it is, it's like...
Interesting.
If you look visually looking at it, you'd almost pick it as an amber.
Yeah.
Because of the colour, so... but yeah, there's a distinct difference between the two with the rye and this...
And this is very much like in the almost like the American tradition, sort of like the recipe seems to be very much American
hops
inspired. Yeah.
Summit, Columbus, Cascade, and Nelson Sauvin.
But that's it. Like, Nelson Sauvin,
a little bit of New Zealand hops.
New Zealand, but I mean Nelson Sauvin's becoming so popular everywhere, isn't it?
That it's still a very much US styled hop, I'd say. But I'm really enjoying this.
This is really nice. Yeah. You definitely get a lot of that rye.
It's just in that back palate, I'm getting it a lot.
And a really nice, if you were to give me this blind and ask me, where do you think this is from? I wouldn't pick remote Scotland.
No, you wouldn't.
Like, I wouldn't. I'd say maybe like Melbourne or, just because, most beers I drink are Australian. I'd say Melbourne or,
I think you would just pick not Riverside.
Yeah, like, this is... I haven't had this before, it's not Riverside.
Yeah. I'd say it was the States, and, you know, I love this style of beer. I love an uber-hopped red ale. Yeah. I think this is...
I think that's one of my favourite styles.
But I was quite excited to see this coming across, because it's Scottish beer, it's craft beer, and like, they're certainly a cask brewery, they make casks of beer, but obviously we're sending bottles across, and it's not Brewdog, so I just thought it was an interesting one
to
get across.
Well, we have another Scottish beer that's not Brewdog to have later.
Indeed.
Yeah.
One that we're not having today that I quite like is...
Tracare House is one of the oldest breweries that you'll actually find. It's like it's a stately home. It's the home of the Stuart clan, which should be the royal family in the UK. The Civil War sorted that one out.
no hard feelings there, right?
A fine Scottish family. And in stately homes back in Britain, they all would have had a brew house. So they would have baked their own bread and they brewed their own beers. So, you know, this stately home goes back to the 12th century. It's got this 12th century brew house sitting down in the bottom of it. And... obviously, they didn't brew for a long time. They certainly didn't brew commercially at all until probably, I think, the mid-1980s, and then they started producing. And again, it was very difficult to find. They only produced a couple of very strong ales. So the Tracare House ale, something about 7 or 8%, which at the time was very strong. Obviously, it's not
still
as strong
now.
It's little bottles of it. Wonderful, wonderful beer. More recently, they've been producing larger scale stuff, the Jacobite ale, and
because you can find the Jacobite in Australia,
more drinkable stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
Because there's a couple of Scottish, I guess, craft breweries that come. Like, isn't the strongest beer in the world like not Brewdog? That's Scottish now, isn't it?
Williams Brothers, is it?
It's not Williams Brothers, no. It's a new one that I've never heard of.
This was a trivia question. I should know the answer to this. and everyone got the answer right as well, so I think people might be cheating.
I think we got it wrong. I'm pretty sure we got it wrong.
it was like snake bite or snake charmer,
something like that. Yeah,
something like that. Snake venom.
By something or other.
By something brewery. Yeah,
but again,
something
that's name.
We'll edit that in.
McSomething, right?
McSomething.
McBain.
McLeod.
There can be only one. Strongest beer in the world.
Brewmeister, there we go.
Brewmeister, yeah, that's a shit venom. Name.
It is a terrible name.
It's McBrewmeister.
yeah, so that was, yeah. That Cromedy was Cromedy, right? Cromedy.
Cromedy, you're Cromedy. Doing very well, man. I'm impressed.
I'm very impressed with myself. that was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I've had two of their beers so far, and I've really enjoyed both of them, and I'm pretty keen to try the other two. That
very new world.
Very new world.
But that's what I would want, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because we've had quite a few sort of older world, and even like I think those Oakums are somewhere caught in between new and old world.
Well, the first Oakum I had was the Citra, which I find very new world.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's a newer beer. Absolutely. Yeah.
I would say all of those Oakums are very new world.
Yeah.
They have
a bit of feeling in them that are a bit... There's some sort of English tradition. Just a little bit in there. I don't know.
I think there is definitely like that... they're holding some sort of...
Yeah.
Factor of that old world style, but
that's why I say it's sort of... I find it... Yeah. It's stuck in between. Not in a bad way, but that's... Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, this next beer is certainly New World.
Awesome.
New World in the extreme in terms of British brewing. Probably the most celebrated brewery in the UK, certainly in England at the moment.
I've heard of them, so...
I've never had a beer from them, though.
I've had one beer from them. Yeah, this brewery is the Colonel from South London. It's run by a guy called Evan O'Riordan and was founded in 2009, and the brewery actually originated in a railway arch very close to London Bridge Station.
Oh wow.
So if you can imagine, on a Saturday morning they used to open their doors of the brewery, and they would set up a little kind of trestle table at the entrance to the brewery, and they would literally sell bottles of their beer to the public, who would walk up this little siding around the railway track and buy bottles of their beer. Just absolutely incredible. And further down the little track that was there, there'd be someone else selling cheese, and then there'd be some meats and, you know, all sorts of things like that. It was like taking a step back kind of 200 years. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you would think of London in a real kind of nostalgic, you know, quaint sort of way.
Charles
but those
Dickens.
Sort of things were existing in Bermondsey, which is possibly one of the rougher areas of London, just in this little tiny corner near London Bridge. But so they, like I say, they opened the brewery on a Saturday morning, but it very quickly grew in terms of its reputation among the beer geek community, which had really started to grow and have a voice around that sort of time. Late in the last decade, and they very quickly became London's kind of most sought after brewery. They began to be stocked in the best pubs across London, and also in some of the high end restaurants as well. So, you know, in places that wouldn't sell beer otherwise, you know, they'd sell top end wines, and they would sell maybe two or three beers, you know, maybe a nice Belgian beer, but then there'd suddenly be this Colonel beer on the list as well. They moved to a bigger premises in, I think it was 2012. It was certainly quite recently. There were some teething problems. Some of their beer wasn't coming out quite like it was at the smaller brewery. But
I think Adrian's enjoying it.
Adrian just his pants.
Just to give you this is their statement on their website. If you go on their website, it's a very simple website, but it says... You know, they produce beer that forces you to confront and consider what you were drinking, and I couldn't put it better myself. I really think that that's what they do.
Yeah.
So this is the IPA 4C.
That's right, IPA 4C, and the 4C stands for sea hops, and those are Cascade. Chinook, Citra, and Columbus.
Yep, definitely, and all of them just come through, and it's. I mean, yeah, again, if you were to give me this and say, where was this brewed, I would not say London.
That is a fucking cracking
beer,
man.
The West Coast of the United States.
Exactly, that's what it tastes like. It tastes like West Coast.
This really shook things up in the UK. You know, when
these
guys
came
about.
So how old
is this brewery? So the breweries, they were formed in 2009.
Wow. Yeah.
So they are really quite new. And this is proper, you know, next wave of craft.
Yeah.
And they would absolutely consider themselves craft brewers as opposed to microbrewers.
And they don't do they do keg?
They do not do any cask whatsoever.
Okay.
And and I would say probably 90% of their stuff is bottled.
Yeah,
right.
So it's very, very rare to find their stuff on draft whatsoever. Yeah. And when they do, they kind of produce these little looking kind of fire extinguisher type cylinders that they kind of give to give to pubs, and it's gone within, you know, like a couple of hours.
Yeah,
the little tiny ones. So it's very hard to come by in terms of draft stock. But people go out of their way in order to get the bottles.
It's also quite a strong one compared to what we've had so far. It's 7.1%.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I still consider that strong. In Australia,
that's pretty
strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly strong for the UK. They do a pale ale version, which is around sort of 5%. They do this one, which is 7.1%, and then they do a double 4C, which is in the sort of 9%.
Oh, wow. that sounds amazing.
But that's just this variety. Then they do all these other types of IPA as well. So they'll do a Summit, Cascade, Citra. Then they'll do a Amarillo, and they just mix up all of these hops in this kind of, you know, concoction, and they just release them in very, very small batches, and you have to just try and kind of catch them at the right time. They're also excellent at the darker stuff. So they do a London Export stout, which is, you know, strong again. They do a sour. They do a table beer, which is 3%, and just tastes absolutely amazing for a 3% beer. It's just so full of flavour. If you were to ask me one beer thing that I miss about being in London when I was there 18 months ago, the Colonel would be the answer for me. Every time people come out and they ask me, what do you want me to bring you? Mm. You know, what are you missing about the UK? Stick a few Colonel bottles in your suitcase. And, and that's where this one came from. It was a friend who came out to visit a couple of months ago, and I've saved it for you guys.
Oh, thank you very much.
I think this is an absolute cracker.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where did you say these guys were based again?
So they're southeast London.
Okay.
They originally were right in the shadow of London Bridge station.
Yeah. Oh, well.
They've actually moved a little bit further away from London Bridge now, but it's still just about walkable from London Bridge station to a slightly larger premises. Mm. But you know, I will always remember them when they were upstarts and they were in the railway arches and, you know, selling their wares to the general public.
On a trestle table, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. just incredible. And you could drink it there as well. Yeah. So you could actually buy it and sit down and drink, you know, in by the arches, and
oh man,
it's just amazing.
I think it's important to, you know, this really reminds you that the same thing is happening in Britain as has happened here and has happened in
seems to be happening
so
everywhere.
The last 12 months in the UK, 187 new breweries have opened. You're talking, these things are booming. If you go back those 20 years, there was two breweries in London, so you had Fuller's and you had Young's. Young's merged with Charles Wells, so all brewed at Charles Wells. So for a while, there's like that one brewery. Then you had the Meantime guys. You know, you've got, you know, other little breweries open now. I think it was
Camden,
about 40
in
London alone. So, you know, it's gone from like two breweries at, you know, the peak of the campaign for real ale success to more than 40. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening.
You talk about the importance of Canberra and what they did, and, you know, that kind of ideal. In 1975, there were 141 breweries across the UK, and this year there are now 1,147, so 1,000 more breweries. And as Willie said, it's consistently growing at about 200 breweries a year.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's not going to be sustainable. You're not going to be able to sustain that sort of growth indefinitely, and it all kind of goes in cycles, and I'm sure there'll be a consolidation again, and, you know, this will all go in a big circle. But
there'll be a campaign of craft ale.
It's certainly boom time in the UK at the moment, maybe a little bit, you know, a few years after the US, and it's great to be in Sydney when that's happening over here as well. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
It is cool to be part of something that's...
It is, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the big reasons that I think I love this industry so much, is that we're right in the middle of this incredibly important time, and it's just, there's so much happening. It's really exciting. Revolution. We're the revolutionaries, guys.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure about us, but I mean, you know, the people brewing
the beer. We're the ones like, we are individuals.
Well, you got to bear in mind, Adrian, this revolution wouldn't happen if nobody was drinking.
Exactly.
This stuff.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I'd say we're revolutionaries.
Yeah, thank you for that beer, man.
Yeah, thank you. That's delicious.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
If my brother brings me some more next week, then I'll be sure to sell it. Sell it? No, I won't sell it. Share it, is what I was about to say.
I'd buy it. So we might get on to The final beer of this epic episode.
Mm. This is another Scottish beer, our second for the episode. How would you pronounce this, Willie? I've never known how to pronounce it.
That's a great question, Adrian. I would call that Ola Doo.
Oh. Okay.
Doo.
Yep. Doop.
That's actually how I pronounced it before. That's weird. I actually got it right for
I
once.
Did not. I was completely wrong.
Yeah.
Ola Dub is what
Ola Dub.
Do you know what that means?
It means a black oil.
It does indeed.
Oh, okay.
That's a great name for this beer, then.
Yeah, I think it's fitting as well. I think it's very
fitting. Would be a very good name for the beer. So this is their old engine oil, which they've aged in whiskey casks. Yeah. And there's three different versions. And oddly enough, I kind of get a little bit irritated by it because they have the 12-year-old version. I think it's 12, 14, and 16.
Or is there an 18 as well?
I think there might be an 18 as well.
So 12, 16, and 18. Mm. And, you know, the
12,
price,
16, 18, yeah.
The price goes up quite a bit between them. But what you're actually doing is you're aging it in a barrel that has had the 12-year-old whiskey in it.
Yep.
Or 16-year-old whiskey
Highland
in it.
Park,
or 18,
Highland Park.
Highland Park whiskey.
Master distillery.
But,
as opposed to it's been aged for 16 years in
a... But there's no difference in cost of buying a 16-year-old barrel or a 12-year-old barrel or an 18-year-old barrel.
I would suggest that there's very limited cost.
And I having tried a couple of these, not all of them, but a couple of different vintages, so to speak, I don't think the price increase is worth it.
I don't see any.
Personally.
I mean, even if you have a whiskey barrel that's had a scotch sitting in it for 16 years rather than 12 years, more of the character from the barrel has gone into
the
scotch,
than the,
therefore there should be less to go into the beer.
So there's a little bit of marketing. Yeah, the younger ones should theoretically taste better.
Have more of a whiskey character.
Yeah, more of a whiskey character. Okay. Yeah.
Which year
are we drinking?
16.
So this is
the middle
16.
One.
Harveston.
Oh my god, that's good.
Again, Harveston was another one of those newish wave microbrewers, so late 1980s they were formed in a place called Dollar in Stirlingshire and central Scotland. And they were producing very much as a cask beer brewery. There was nothing that they had in bottles at the time. They just had casks of beer. And while I was running the pubs back in Edinburgh, this was one of the most popular breweries. The beers that they brewed at the time were, you know, pretty ordinary Scottish ales. Old Manor was their most popular one. It was, like, you know, relatively strong, about 4.5%, so relatively strong for Scotland. Very malty, so Scottish beer doesn't have as many hops in it as your English style. It's not as bitter.
Because they don't grow up there?
The hops have to travel south.
They don't grow up there, and we're a bit mean, so we're not going to spend all that money in. And ingredients are a little bit difficult to get to. But over the years, Harveston, like, you know, they moved the brewery into a much more modern facility, a much bigger facility. They started bottling a lot of the beer. They started making some much more interesting beers. And you know what we have over here, you occasionally see the bitter and twisted.
Yeah.
Which
Mr.
again was
Snowballs, you see.
Mr. Snowballs, we've seen it at Christmas time. Absolutely. Shirley-Han,
I have seen the old engine oil as well.
Yeah, old engine oil.
And old engine oil, and you have these ones. These ones have certainly got a great craft ring, so a lot of the craft guys are selling these. And it's a pretty strong, pretty...
And it's delicious.
Pretty out there, their beer.
This is very good. And I was just checking on Untappd, and I've had the 30 and the 18 before, but never anything younger. And
30?
There's a 30. And this is easily the best one I've
there's
had.
There's a 30, 16, 18, and 12.
And
there's a 40?
There's a 40?
According to Untappd, there's a 40.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
So again, yeah. Remember that's
not actually 40 years old.
That's just a cask. Which from the distill, I mean, you know, very few whiskies are 40 years old, so they're very rare to find. However, a 40-year-old cask or a 12-year-old cask is actually really the same value. So
it costs the distillery the same amount of money to buy the cask. I just held on to it for longer.
The distillery just wants to chuck it out at the end.
It's a byproduct, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's another Scottish, and we'll call them craft brewer, called Innocent Gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And they do oak aged beers, and they've certainly got quite a backlash against them, where their oak aging process doesn't actually involve aging in a barrel. It actually involves the wood chips being added to the brews. Mm. A few of them are actually aged in barrels, not all of them, and certainly the bigger selling ones aren't aged in barrels. We use the oak chips, and it just adds a little bit of vanilla, a bit of extra complexity into the beer.
It's what's used in cheap wines as well, as the same process.
Absolutely, same process to make bad Australian Chardonnay.
Yes, exactly.
And they use clear bottles as well, which
and they use clear bottles, which we've got a huge issue. And they brew out of the Tennent's Well Park Brewery.
Really, I didn't know that.
Glasgow.
Yeah.
And Tennent's is no longer obviously Bass sold the breweries. So Tennent's was independent-ish for quite a long time. It's now owned by one of the big Irish cider manufacturers. So to be using that facility, of course, it's certainly not very popular with the craft beer guys. However, they have their own brewing unit within that brewery. Yes, it's a big brewery, but
is it craft?
Yeah, there's certainly
questions. I have more issue with the oak-chipping and the fact that their brewery is inside
another
brewery.
And my biggest issue, so it's an oak-chipping when you're calling it, oak-aged. I've got an issue with
that. Well, the logo has barrels on it.
And they even have a special name for it. It's called the Oakinator or something like that.
Something along those lines.
Is it one of those garden mulches where you throw trees in and mulch comes out the other side?
they're not really doing what they seem to be claiming to do. Clear bottles, bloody hell, that's just shocking. Yeah. Whereas for Harveston, they're actually getting, they're in business with Highland Park, and they're actually taking those barrels and aging the beer
in the barrels,
making some special tasty beer out of it.
Yeah, very, very, very tasty.
Just going back to Harveston, and they're actually a really interesting case from a are they crafts kind of perspective, because.
And you would get into this.
Willie talked a lot about the early years and how they kind of developed, but they also won the Champion Beer of Britain from Camera in 2003, which really kind of propelled them into the limelight a bit more. And they were bought out by a brewery called Caledonian Brewery, who were really kind of on the larger side of microbreweries at the time. They were bought out in 2006, but then Caledonian in turn were bought out by Scottish Newcastle a couple of years later, and during that buyout they actually released Harveston again. So they kind of went from being a independent to somebody who was owned by a larger favourable brewery to somebody who was then released again to do their own thing. So they kind of, you could argue that they had a kind of lucky escape, and they're now still a very much a fiercely independent micro and producing stuff like this. You may never have saw this.
They were bought by a Newcastle brewery?
Scottish and Newcastle. So they were one of the original big six that we were talking about.
Brewing Foster's? Was that what we're talking about before?
They're brewing Foster's now. They weren't originally. Cool. Courage was brewing.
And most of the
Foster's
muck
originally.
That's being sold in the UK at the moment.
Scottish Newcastle owned Feekson's. So, when Scottish Newcastle bought Feekson's, there was a... Well, Feekson's was bought by another regional brewery called Matthew Brown, which was then swallowed up by Scottish
Newcastle.
There
seems to be a lot of that within...
Oh, very much. That's the way breweries work.
Well, it's the same all over the world.
Everywhere until now, where you get more and more independence. Mm.
So what do you guys think about this beer?
Delicious. I'm
getting multi-grain bread... Caramel,
bit of saltiness,
bit of bacon,
little bit of that scotch as well, like very subtle scotch
character to it.
You get that warmth.
It's so smooth. It's so lovely.
It's really smooth.
It's like 8% or something.
I could just
smash this down for an 8% beer.
I've never done like a vertical between the Harvest and...
I did have the 30 and the 18 side by side, and I wasn't very impressed with either of them.
With the difference, or
with the difference,
yeah.
And this is like I'm very impressed with this one. So,
yeah, but I think that's a really nice one to sort of close up the episode on.
Mm.
So we might just do a quick recommendations round.
Yeah. So what we do usually, I'm sure you guys have listened to one or two episodes. recently we've been doing non beer recommendations, but to the theme, so something British, but you can do beer recommendations as well, whatever you feel like. I'm going to start off with, if you're ever in London, you want to look for a good beer pub, go to Parsons Green, go to the White Horse, fantastic pub. Don't go there on a game day though, because it's like the Chelsea hangout, and
you don't want that.
It's just standing room only. I went there on a game day and it was horrible, but great beer selection.
I can absolutely endorse that. They have two beer festivals a year, which are absolutely fantastic. There's the 4th of July weekend that they do, which they bring in a load of American beers. They were one of the first pubs in the UK to bring in American stuff.
Mm.
Not only do they bring stuff in on keg, but they actually bring in exclusive stuff on cask well. So they sell this American stuff from some of the best breweries on cask. And then their Old Ale Festival, which is held in November, is just incredible.
That sounds
some of the
amazing.
Beers that I have had at that festival in years gone by are beautiful, and there's vomit on the tube to attest to how
nice. Which
way do we want to go, this way or
clockwise?
Alright, I'm going to go with the brewery, and probably the first craftish London brew that I really got into was Meantime, and so I'll say have a crack of a Meantime IPA if you can get your hands on one. A really special beer, close to my heart. Yeah.
Willie, I think if you've got anything,
I think one of the ones. I mean, we talked a lot about the cask conditioned beers, and I think probably Four Pines here in Manly, is probably the place to go and actually see how it's actually set out. So they actually have a stillage unit. They actually have proper British casks. I was going to call them English casks. There's nothing wrong with that. There's proper English casks sitting there, conditioning, getting ready. You know, so you know, you get in there. They have to sit there for a while, nice, completely still. Let a little bit of the gas escape. Tap it, and on it goes onto the hand pump, and that's probably the only place in Sydney where you can really see
the whole
happening,
process,
and you know that it's proper real ale. So
yeah, they've designed that unit really well, haven't they?
Yeah. It's definitely the only issue with it, of course, is because it's unpredictable. You don't know how quickly it's going to sell. It takes a few days for it to get ready. It's not always there, so phone ahead before you do it. But if you want proper beer and you don't have the opportunity to go across to Britain, that's where you get it.
Nice.
It's almost as expensive to get to Manly.
not with the Opal card.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, Sunday's $2.50.
Sunday.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the UK again, and we've talked about sort of pub chains in a really negative light, but to talk about one that's doing really, really positive things in the UK at the moment, and that's the Craft Beer Co. They probably got the best beer pub in the whole of London in Clerkenwell, where they've got 16, I think it is, keg taps and about 18 cask hand pumps.
That's pretty serious.
All at the same time. But since then they've expanded. There's now four outlets in London. There's one in North London. There's one in Brixton, and they've just opened a new one as well in Clapham. There's also an outlet in Brighton, and I really hope that they continue to roll out their fantastic brand across the UK. It's cask conditioned English beer. It's your craft keg British stuff alongside the likes of Michela and Evil Twin and Tool. Yeah. And then there's American stuff from the likes of Southern Tier. It's the go-to place for the best beer in the UK.
Mm.
Wow. I'm not going to pretend it's cheap. It's not, but you know, if you want that beer, that's
although
where
if you're used to Australian prices, maybe.
Yeah. If you're used to Australian prices, it's a holiday. So nice. If, you know, if you're listening in the UK or if you're going over to the UK, Craft Beer Co. is where it's at.
Nice, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
So I'm going to recommend Green King IPA.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm going to recommend watching The Ashes.
Don't
mention the war.
No, seriously, I'm going to recommend probably one of the breweries that really got me thinking about beer, and really got me thinking about like the fact that beer doesn't just have to be water, malt, hops, yeast, that it can be like pretty crazy and out there. And that'd be BrewDog from Scotland. And mm-hmm. so that'd be sort of, I mean, I guess it's maybe a bit of a tired recommendation because probably everyone listening to this has drunk a lot of BrewDog. Mm. But I think just when like thinking, yeah. for me, thinking of British breweries, like that's just the one that has probably captured my heart the most with what they've brewed. So
I think that's absolutely fair. Yeah, absolutely. I think BrewDog were instrumental in kind of changing the perceptions of the British beer drinker,
yeah.
moving away from that cask is the only way. Yeah.
And creating what is now the current craft movement, I'd say.
Absolutely.
Like
they're
definitely,
they brought in they brought in the best of the UK.
They're not necessarily creating it, yeah. they're definitely pushing that. So
best of the US, and their bars are great as well. You know, we talked about chain. I talked about chain bars with the Craft Beer Co. BrewDog bars are sprouting up around the UK and beyond, and they're a great night out. They're a great night out. They've got a great balance between the best of their range plus other beers
guests
as well,
and
you know, it's a really good night out. So yeah, get down to BrewDog.
So lastly, our producer is recommending everyone eat a meal with HP sauce.
I was going to recommend watching Doctor Who as well. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Brad and Willie.
Yeah, thank you guys. Pleasure. This has been the most informative.
I've learned.
We'll have you guys back. Like, you guys actually do your research.
Yeah.
Just something to start contrast to us. Hey. You guys should start a podcast. Yeah.
I've been unsessionable now. I feel like I've made it. So thanks, guys.
All right. Well, we might do the Twitter thing. The podcast is at Sessionable Pod. That's our current thing. We have the password to that, so we can use it. I'm personally on Twitter at A Study in Beer.
had to think about
which A Study in.
Not A Study in Bears, not A Study
balls.
In Bees, not A Study balls. In Balls.
And I think everyone at this table is on Twitter, so we'll go around in the same
direction. Yeah, I'm at Adrian Poor.
I'm the Bill Lebowski.
I'm Wilson Skek, SCEC.
Are you going to keep that one?
I'll keep it for a while. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm at the Double.
Right, nice. And our producer is at All for Beer. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for joining us. I think that was an awesome episode.
Yeah, I think half of our listeners are actually in this room.
Yeah,
at the moment.
We might wrap it up there. All right, bye.
Cheers.
Sessionable. 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 Sessionable.